Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Greetings, Grapple fans. Welcome once again to the Pro Wrestling Index right here on the Anfield Index podcast channel, where tonight it is nostalgia time. I love a bit of nostalgia on this show, and we're rolling up to the Rumble, and you know how it is by now. When we get to the big shows, we like to do a bit of nostalgia. However, a little bit of a change to things tonight, because as we promised last week, although we will do a little bit of Royal Rumble nostalgia, with it being the 25th anniversary of Raw coming up, we're going to focus our nostalgic attention on the past 25 years of Raw. So there's so much to cover there, so many great moments, so many classic matches, promos, episodes, everything. So a whole pile of crap in there as well, by the way. But anyway, with so much content to look back on, so many memories to share, obviously I can't do that by myself. I must therefore call upon the services of my audio tag team partner, the one and only Mo Chatra. Good evening, Mo.
How do? How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I've been looking forward to this. I do love it when we chat a bit of nostalgia, because yeah, you know, I'm of a certain age, so I like to look back upon, you know, when it was good and all of that.
Oh, it was always better in our day, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Even though they've never had it so good, these young'uns.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But no, I mean, it's there's plenty of good stuff today, but there was also some pretty decent stuff back in the day, and 25 years, good grief. And I remember when that show launched in early 1993, and it was talked about as a live show on a weekly basis. And that was something WWE, to that point in time, I believe, had never, ever done. So there was a lot of hype and talk around this new pioneering show. And 25 years on, it's still with us, bigger than ever. So well done to the
longer
WWE.
Than ever. When you say bigger, oh, yeah, you mean longer, don't you? Like 3.25 hours.
Oh, certainly, yeah. I can't wait until it goes to 4 hours in the future. That's
yeah, I'm sure that
I can imagine at the 50th anniversary, when we're still doing this, we'll be talking about, yep. Right, so recapping last week's six-hour Raw, half of which was on the WWE Network. I dread to think where that will go.
Yeah, it's oh my word, yeah. That eight-hour shift, yeah, I remember that, yeah. I watched half of Raw. Yeah, we got for a 24-hour Raw. Imagine the advertising revenue we could get. Oh my word. Let's not encourage him.
No, absolutely, yeah.
Right. So let's kick off the nostalgia then. We mentioned, you know, it, obviously, yes, the theme being is 25 years of Raw. So that takes us back to 1993. Now, like you say, normally we do the Rumble at this time and the nostalgia around the Royal Rumble. So we'll pick up the Rumble then, because, you know, we had our nostalgia last year with the Rumble, and I think by consensus it's still pretty much agreed that the best ever Royal Rumble match itself is still probably 1992 when Ric Flair was in there from beginning to end. Absolutely tremendous match. Great commentary with Bobby Heenan on, you know, just kind of really put the icing and the cherry on top of that cake. So moving it on a year to 1993 then. This is not one of them Royal Rumbles that's instantly sort of remembered when you pick out the classics, is it more?
No, you can say that again. talk about a come down. I mean, 92 was as good as you get. Star-studded, full of memorable moments, incredible finish, amazing performance by Ric Flair. As you said earlier, very memorable commentary by Bobby the Brain Heenan. Almost the perfect Royal Rumble. And then to follow that up with the 93 one, where far less star-studded, felt very flat. Crowd in the Arco Arena in Sacramento wasn't immensely hyped for the event itself. Just a real letdown, very disappointing, and a very, very different type of winner for that Rumble compared to the previous year. So, yeah, that was certainly not something that we look back on fondly.
No, I mean, I sat through it at the weekend. I sat through and watched it again thinking, I don't really remember this one. And then kind of was watching it and thinking, I got about halfway through and I was thinking, you know what? This is why I don't remember this one, because it's not memorable. And there's just so much filler in the card, you know, on the 30 men, there's probably sort of, I don't know, halfway through, there's just random tag team members here, there, at chock-a-block full. And it was one of the worst Rumbles that I've ever seen, and was basically just set up for Yokozuna to come in near the end and predictably win it, because let's face it, who the hell was going to put Yokozuna over the top rope? It just physically wasn't possible.
No, absolutely. You know, they obviously debuted him in 1992, had big plans for him, and wanted to push him to the moon as the big new monster, and that was fairly successful as part of this Royal Rumble match in terms of getting him over as a top star, and you know, somebody who was actually relatively inexperienced. I don't think he'd been long in the business at that point, and I think it was in terms of age, was only in his mid-20s at that point, so quite a young guy, and obviously was being pushed towards the WWE title at that point in time, and wanted to do big things with him at WrestleMania 9 out in Las Vegas, which was the famous outdoor WrestleMania, and
obviously to get him there.
No, it wasn't, and obviously to get him there, they had to put him over at the Rumble. It really wasn't a very memorable contest in itself. But we had a certain very, very tall person turn up, though, didn't we, in Giant Gonzalez?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. who or what the hell is this? It's a massive guy. It's about a 7'5" basketball player in a naked skin suit, what it looks like. Yeah, that was pretty dreadful. Not quite as bad as he was in the ring, though, it's got to be said. But yeah, that again, that was all basically to set up him versus Undertaker at WrestleMania. So it wasn't a very good Royal Rumble match, and it wasn't a particularly memorable Royal Rumble event either. There wasn't a lot on there. The one bright spot on the card, I'd say, was the WWF title match at the time, Bret Hart versus Razor Ramon. Obviously, Razor was quite a hot character at the time. Bret Hart in his pomp, in his prime, and you go back and you watch Bret Hart there, and compared to some of the guys now, and it's like, look at the way that Bret Hart puts in, you know, the way he overemphasizes and puts in every single punch and every single kick. It's like, you know, he really lays them in, and it's there you go, guys. There's a clinic for you. Go back and watch it. Not, probably not remembered as a great match or anything like that, but an example of a good match and just how to do some of the basics.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, he was labelled as the excellence of execution, and never was there a more apt moniker for a wrestler. The way he executed his moves was virtually flawless. And, you know, this was another of many, many examples of Brett working a really solid, solid match. Certainly by the standards of some of his absolute classics, not up there with those, but perfectly reasonable outing and fine title defense as well. And you know, this was a match that I enjoyed. Probably was the match of the night. That's not really saying too much to say. It was,
it's not. It's really not.
Yeah, yeah. It was a flat show. I mean, for those that are not aware, the WWE at that time was actually going through really, really hard times because the steroid scandal had broken in 1992, and at the same time, there were also sexual abuse scandals that had broken the same year. So there was all kinds of shit going on in the WWF, and you know, we had talent leaving, and we had issues with people, you know, who were running things behind the scenes. There were issues with referees, ring announcers, and all sorts. So morale within the company was at a pretty low point at that point in time. And on top of that, because of the steroid scandal, a lot of talent were not allowed to use steroids. Whereas up until 1992, about 90% of the roster was on steroids. So that's why you started to see certain individuals' physiques become a lot smaller, less well-defined.
People wearing vests and T-shirts who always wrestled without a shirt on, strangely.
Yeah. It's funny how that happened. So, you know, it was kind of... very emblematic of the times generally for the WWE that it was a rough time, and the show itself was far from great. So it was no surprise that the show was as flat as it was, because, as I say, times were tough and they'd had big names leave, and it was pretty hard going for Vince and co. But they rode through that and other storms, and are obviously still around today.
Absolutely. So I mean, we'll leave that one where it is then. So, you know, in terms of nostalgia, 1993, not great in terms of Rumble history, but obviously, you know, a huge year for WWE, and that, the, like you said, you know, the start of this weekly show, Raw. It wasn't, I've got to say, it didn't, you know, really grab me initially more. What have you watched? You know, are you one of those who've watched Raw week in, week out all the way through, or have you kind of dipped in and dipped out as time's gone along?
I didn't actually start watching Raw when it first launched. I was obviously aware of it. I was a fan of wrestling at that point and had been for many years prior to that. But I wasn't fortunate enough to have Sky in my home till a couple of years later in 1995. So the only exposure to Raw that I had was the occasional times when friends of mine in school would record the show on tape from memory. But in fact, it's insane that I can't even remember if it was actually broadcast on Sky. It might have been that highlights of that show were packaged into another 1 hour show and broadcast on something like WWF Mania or something like that. So
from what I can recall, and this is just going on memory, I believe that was still around the time where they would show it on Sky, but there was kind of like a delay. You know, you were always getting things a couple of weeks later. You know, the, like, you weren't up to date. It took a few years before suddenly everything was up to date and started to feel that bit fresher. I mean, personally, I felt like Raw didn't really get going until the mid-90s anyway. I think it took a few, 2 or 3 years to really sort of get going and everything kind of picked up. So what about in terms of matches? Is there, over the years, any particular matches that really stand out for you? I mean, and going back a few years, for one that for me that I'd almost forgotten about, and that was The Undertaker against Jeff Hardy, which was, I guess, a kind of like a bit of a turning point for Jeff Hardy in a way that, you know, nobody kind of really saw him as anything more than that sort of spectacular tag team guy. And that was, you know, that The Undertaker really kind of putting Jeff Hardy over. That was one that kind of stuck out for me more.
Oh, yeah. That was certainly one of the best Raw matches to feature The Undertaker. And obviously, he had been around since Raw started in 93, but despite that, he didn't actually have all that many really great memorable matches on the show, but that was arguably the best one that he ever had on the show. Really, really entertaining. Did a very good job of putting Jeff Hardy over, and Jeff at, I would say, his peak as well, because Jeff was really kind of starting to catch on as a singles talent as well, and that was certainly something that was quite helpful for him in terms of his career trajectory. So that was certainly one of the better ones. I was actually looking back at some of the great matches in Raw history, and one that certainly comes to mind is actually one that's been forgotten over time, and this is a match going back to July 1993, and it's a match between Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty. And obviously the Rockers, Shawn and Marty, split up in I think it was, when was it, early 92?
I was going to say that'd be back in, it'd have to be early 92, because I mean, that was something like, that was the days of Wrestling Challenge, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah. And obviously there was that very famous angle in the barbershop where like Marty was super kicked. That's it. And that was some 18 months prior to this match taking place. So Shawn had obviously done other things after the initial feud between those two, and obviously had a run at the WWF title with Brett, and obviously wasn't able to claim that title at the first time of asking. But nonetheless, they came together for a match in July 93 and had one of the all-time great WWF / WWE television matches. It was a really, really exceptional match. To that point in time, it was probably the best television, not pay-per-view, but television WWF match ever. And even nearly 25 years on, there've perhaps only been three or four matches that have been at that level. So that was a match I'd actually forgotten about. But when I watched it back this week, it was something I actually remembered seeing around that time. So it must have been one that a friend of mine must have recorded for me and lent me the tape and said, you've got to check this out. And the memories came back of that one. And it was just showing just how great a worker Shawn Michaels was, because, and in fairness, Marty Jannetty was not too bad himself, but Shawn was just an amazing talent. He was really on his day, arguably the best the business has ever seen. Just could do things in the ring that very few talents in the history of the business have ever been able to do. So if you haven't seen that match, if you've forgotten about it, that's certainly one to check out.
Yeah, I tell you, the thing with Raw now is one of the big things of Raw is this, you know, the night after WrestleMania. It's really become a thing, hasn't it, over the last, I don't know, maybe sort of half dozen years, where WrestleMania has become this enormous event, almost an outside of wrestling. You know, it's almost become bigger than wrestling itself. It's just like this event, like an annual event, and people travel from all over the world, and you get so many European fans and British fans that they're there for WrestleMania, and they stay, and they're there to enjoy the Raw the night after, and you seem to just get this incredible atmosphere. And there's one thing that kind of that I almost associate that with, and that will be Dolph Ziggler cashing in on Alberto Del Rio. And obviously it was, you know, sort of 30 seconds or so, whatever it was, or a minute of a match. But that, you know, they're the kind of moments I think, you know, some of these special moments that Raw's had, and it's the night after WrestleMania. These are just, they're quite special, aren't they, really?
Oh, yeah, totally. You know, sometimes what I like to do is just go onto YouTube occasionally, and you get these compilation videos of these moments that got these staggering reactions, these really massive crowd pops. And, you know, this match is, and this whole segment is actually something that features on a lot of these types of compilation videos, because the reaction to Ziggler coming out was just incredible. The noise was just amazing, and not only when he came out, but when he lifted the title after he pinned Alberto Del Rio, that was just magical. I mean, the adrenaline that must have been pumping through must have been you know, indescribable. It just must have been incredible to be at the focal point of that.
Yeah, that was pure emotion. That's the thing, you know. It's obviously they're putting on a show, and there's pretense and everything in there, and there's characters. But there are times when, you know, the person behind the character, the real person, comes out, and that, you know, was one of their moments where you could see it really come out, and you think, that was, you know, that's a pretty damn special moment for that person, you know, for that guy. Forget the, you know, the wrestling character, for the person there, that really was a pretty damn special moment.
Oh yeah, totally. And, you know, obviously he had AJ Lee and Big E with him as well, and you know, it was a very real moment. You know, there was no acting involved there. That was just very, you know, special moment for Ziggler, enjoying it with those two as well. And you know, it was at the time when, you know, Ziggler was actually fairly popular with the WWE fan base, and obviously since then persistently
into
poor
obscurity
booking. yeah, that's it. Hasn't done him any favors, and he's really fallen in stock. Well, I say that, but I mean, his reaction on the last SmackDown pay-per-view wasn't too bad when he surprisingly won the Intercontinental belt. But yeah. Nonetheless, that was a very special moment. And, you know, another very, very special reaction was, I think, about 12 months prior to that, at the post-WrestleMania Raw, when Brock Lesnar, after several years away, finally returned to the WWE and confronted John Cena. And the reaction that he got was as loud. That was unbelievable.
Yeah, 2012 that was, yeah. That was a hell of a reaction he got there. I mean, it's incredible to think now, isn't it, that we're talking almost 6 years ago, you know, that he... Brock Lesnar returned 6 years. That was a hell of a reaction. There's been quite a few of them over the years as well, hasn't there? You know, you think back, there was the Paige one. What was that, 2014, I think? Paige debuting, winning the Divas title from AJ Lee on her first night. The reaction that she got when she came out. I mean, and it's almost become a thing as well, isn't it? Stars debuting or people getting called up from NXT debuting has become kind of like the new thing, hasn't it? And these, you know, the underground fans being able to give that reaction, you know, the, on the Raw that, that immediately follows WrestleMania.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the most hardcore elements of the WWE fan base converge from around the world, and they all try to make sure that they're there in attendance at the Raw the next night, and most of them still stick around for the SmackDown 24 hours later. And, you know, they just have a ball. They have a complete riot, and they take over the show. They react how they want rather than how the company wants them to. And you know, clearly that does. Yeah, well, that's the one night of the year where if he was still on Raw, that he'd still be over. But yeah, that was a fantastic reaction for him back in, I think it was the 2012 show, or 2013, where you know, they were singing that entrance theme throughout the night, and you know, he got a lot of publicity off of that, and made a bit of a career out of himself, and he's obviously still there.
Fair play to him.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But no, so, some of those reactions, and I mean, these are reactions that are ones that will live long in the memory. But you know, there were some during the Attitude Era where the crowds were generally hotter, because the audience used to be of a certain demographic and would turn up tanked up. It was largely a college crowd and young male audience, 80-90%, and they were served a product that kind of was aimed at that type of crowd, and you know, they really lapped it up. And you know, you think back to some of the hot angles featuring Stone Cold and The Rock, especially where you'd have a beatdown and somebody like Stone Cold's music would hit and he'd storm to the ring, or he was working an angle with Vince, and the reactions would just be off the charts. It'd just be unbelievable noise. And even, I mean, some of the matches as well.
Mankind winning the title.
Yeah, you know, talk
about classic matches. I mean, again, it's one where it's not the match that you actually remember. It's that moment of Mankind wins the title. And obviously, kind of wrapped up in that as well is the whole WCW at the time. This was when Raw was still being taped, you know, was it like earlier that day, and then being, you know, being broadcast that evening, and they were giving away the results. And it was the whole, you know, or Mick Foley, who used to go under the name, whatever, I can't even think of it, what it is now. You know, he's winning the title. Oh, that's going to put butts on seats. And it's everybody switched over to see that moment. And it was a genuine thing. And you've got Stone Cold involved in that. Or obviously, Mankind beats The Rock. You've got whole DX involved in that, the corporation. You've got, yeah, Steve Austin comes down. It's a humongous thing of that time. It was huge. It really was. It was huge. And like you said, reactions, they were, that wasn't just the night after WrestleMania reaction. You know, we were getting this on a weekly basis, and that was something else, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. 98, 99, 2000 into 2001. The reactions for those most over characters were deafening. And I mean, you can go back. I mean, for those that have got access to the WWE network, you know, all of those Raws are on there, and you can pick out any random Raw and just watch the opening couple of minutes. Look at the amount of signs that were held up. Like, it was just a sea of signs. Yeah. Everyone had a sign. That showed just how into the product the fans were at that time. And, you know, it's not quite the same these days. I mean, you do still see with certain audiences, you know, a very lively crowd. And obviously, I've mentioned the SmackDown pay-per-view that took place a few weeks ago. And that was in Boston, and the crowd was very amped in that town. And Chicago is always a great crowd. And as we said, you know, when the WWE runs these back-to-back tapings after big pay-per-views, such as around SummerSlam or WrestleMania, they tend to attract the hardcore fans that also like to make a noise as well. But yeah, there were those days when this was a weekly occurrence in terms of mad crowd reactions. You know, if you're a newer fan who likes to binge watch on Netflix, well, you know, you could do worse than actually binge watching Raw from the Attitude Era, because
absolutely, yeah, just
all the episodic stuff.
Yeah, go back and experience that. I mean, they had a vote on the WWE Network, and I'm not convinced 100% whether some of that is legit, looking at some of the things that were in the top 25. Less said about that the better. But what got voted in at number one was the Austin beer bath. Now, and that's back in probably, I think it was about 99. And the reaction then, the crowd went absolutely nuts. And this is, you know, like, you're talking 18 months into where Austin had really started, or maybe actually a couple of years into the point where a couple of years on from Austin and Bret Hart at WrestleMania 13. So Austin had already got hot, and it was white hot week after week after week. The announcers, everything, it was just, the atmosphere was incredible, and you seem to get these memorable moments, perhaps not every week, but, you know, every two or three weeks, you seem to get moments that you now look back on and think, God, I remember that. I remember that. Oh, I remember that. I remember that. Probably more so than today. Is that fair?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've got to balance it as well by pointing out that there was also tons of absolute crap on Raw on those shows as well in that Attitude Era.
Yeah, mostly the wrestling.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the matches generally were fairly short. I mean, and believe it or not, listeners, there were, back then Raw was 2 hours, but some of those Raws, the total match time, I kid you not, was less than 15 minutes for all of the matches on Raw.
Yeah,
and that's 15 minutes of wrestling on a 2-hour episode of wrestling.
I was actually looking, you know, just quickly on that, more, I was looking back at some of the old results from Raw, and there was a run in late 95 where week on week you had 4 or 5 matches on Raw, on a 2-hour Raw, and that was it.
Yeah,
5 matches tops. And yeah, some of those were 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 3 minutes. Yeah, it wasn't about what was going on in the ring.
No, absolutely. So there was a lot of stuff which, you know, we would have forgotten about, and for good reason as well. But in amongst that, there was just some unbelievably good stuff, which lives up, holds up today just as much as it did back then. And it's certainly well worth the watch. And it's also fair to say that what sparked that whole period of creativity and originality was the war with WCW, because, make no mistake, WWE's existence was genuinely at risk. You know, they were even considering closing up shop in 97 because they were well behind in the ratings to WCW. They were losing money. They didn't see how they could turn it around. Their big stars had been heading into WCW and making more money there. The remaining few stars were making noises about wanting to go. Bret Hart almost joined WCW in 1996 before being convinced to sign a 20-year contract only about 12 or 13 months prior to the Montreal Screwjob, believe it or not. And had he left, had he decided, okay, I will take Bischoff's offer and head over, Vince actually might well have said, okay, right, I'm done. So that's how close.
Yeah. And ironically, Bret Hart didn't actually want to join WCW. It was almost Vince talking him into to going ahead and signing the deal that near enough a year later for the money.
In 97, do you mean?
Yeah, yeah. Getting him off the getting him his wage off the books.
Yeah, I mean he signed a very expensive contract when he signed that 20-year deal, and at that time, as I say, the WWF, as it was losing money, which Vince could only sustain for so long, and that's why he was really fearful about the future of the company and was genuinely considering closing it down. But it was that Montreal screw job which was part of what helped turn the corner. And it actually started happening 2-3 months prior to that, when the Stone Cold character started to gain some traction, and he felt that actually this might have some legs, and the then started to put into place plans for the angle with Mike Tyson that took place at the Raw after WrestleMania, which drew a great rating and beat in that quarter hour segment the whatever was running opposite on Raw on Nitro, sorry. And it was a couple of months after that for the first time in, I think it was 80 or 90 odd weeks, that Raw beat Nitro in the ratings. And by that point in time, the Austin character was on fire. And I remember going to the Manchester Evening News Arena in April 98, just shortly after WrestleMania, Austin against Triple H in the main event, 18,500 sellout crowd. And the reaction to Austin is the loudest crowd reaction I've ever heard in my life at any event, whether it's football, wrestling, music, anything, you name it. Never, ever heard noise like it. It was just incredible. And that's what leaving in Austin and giving him a push and allowing him freedom of expression was able to achieve. And in fairness to Austin, he took the ball and ran with it as well. And what they ended up producing was incredible.
Yeah, it's quite a unique thing. It really is. I mean, bring it forward a little bit. You know, I mean, some more recent moments. I guess one that really kind of jumps out there, and you know, you talk about promos, and you know, we're saying about, you know, there wasn't not always about what was actually happening in the ring on Raw. One of the most memorable promos on Raw has got to be that the CM Punk pipe bomb, so called, where he, you know, in quote, was shooting on Vince McMahon and the WWE, and obviously we know that is pretty much agreed, and I don't know how far you go scripted, but certainly agreed what they were going to say, but it felt real, didn't it? And it was at that time, I think I felt like the WWE was on a bit of a lull, and this just really shook everything up, didn't it?
Oh, it did, yeah. And I mean, it needed it, because obviously by that point in time, WWE was certainly well into the PG era and the Attitude era. And the kind of.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Remnants of that were well and truly gone and pretty much died out by around 2008-09. And, you know, the WWE was struggling to find itself with an identity that could resonate with its audience in a PG era. And, you know, CM Punk was echoing the kind of frustrations of the fans, but also of the talent as well, about some things that we've complained about on this podcast numerous times, about the lack of creativity that talent were allowed, the lack of expression that they were allowed, and the amount to which they were constrained in terms of what they could and couldn't do. And you know, that kind of harkens back to the point I was just making about Austin a moment ago. And, you know, that was the making of CM Punk, ironically, that expressing frustrations in that way really got him over and turned him into almost like a modern-day Austin in a way, this kind of rebel, a very different kind of rebel, but a rebel nonetheless. And the reactions to him as a result were superb. And not so much on Raw, but some of his pay-per-view appearances in Chicago, the reactions he got were Austin-esque, weren't they? Just incredibly loud. And
That was 2011, wasn't it? Yeah, that's 2011.
Right,
yeah. So it was the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, wasn't it? Where a few weeks later he wins the title, and you know, apparently it leaves the WWE. But yeah, that was in Chicago, and that was. That remains one of the most incredible atmospheres I've seen in the WWE.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and that was special. But what one of the other promos that's unforgettable, that was even more recent, was the retirement promo of Daniel Bryan a couple of years ago. You know, that was something that. Fans were not, certain sections of the fan base were expecting. There was talk that he might have to retire. You know, it was a very, very memorable promo because it was so heartfelt, very honest, very emotional. And the reaction that he got was very, very organic because he spoke from the heart. And, you know, when you have promos that feel real, and are spoken from the heart, again, they connect to the audience in a way that scripted promos just simply can't.
No, and, it had echoes of Edge's retirement speech a few years earlier as well, didn't it? That again, that similar kind of thing. It was real. It was, I mean, the Edge one. That was the night after WrestleMania. You know, he'd been given the news, and it was heartfelt. You could see, you know, he was. You know, there was tears in his eyes. This was real, you know, because these aren't like American football players who've been converted or bodybuilders who've been converted. These are lifelong wrestling fans who grew up wanting to do nothing else but become wrestlers. So they were always fans of the product. They were always fans of the business. And here they were living their dream. They're on top and they're having to retire. And you're right, yeah, something the heartfelt promos, you know, the speech that they give, it's, you know, as you know, from all of those adrenaline moments and everything else, these are the kind of moments that kind of stick out over the years as well, aren't there, as being kind of as having that special feel to them.
That's right, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, very, very different type of promos, obviously, but some of the ones from The Rock, I'm not so much referring to the great promos that he cut week in, week out during the Attitude Era, but I'm actually referring to the ones where he make his comebacks or returns. Sometimes even if it was just for the one night, if they were taping Raw in Miami and he was in between filming movies and he just turned up for that one night and went out there for 15 minutes and ran through his catchphrases. But the way that he would deliver those promos, in terms of promo delivery, he is perhaps the best ever. Unbelievable promo delivery, incredibly charismatic, and just has the audience in the palm of his hand. And,
can I just say more? There's one that kind of sticks out for me on that. When you mentioned them, is when The Rock was off doing movies and Stone Cold, it was the time when Stone Cold had walked out of Raw. He fell out with the WWE and walked out and he was gone. And they were building it up as the return, and it was all about Vince McMahon expecting Stone Cold was coming back. And out came The Rock at the end. And he gave a really impassioned speech. I guess was almost, you know, the big FU to Austin from the office, but it was about, I guess he was getting the message across to the fans that it's not just about Steve Austin. There are so many more people in the back in that locker room who just want to do whatever they can to entertain the fans. And it was just, there was something about the way he delivered that promo again. It's just evidence, as what you say, you know, the guy's probably the best ever in terms of delivering a promo.
Yeah. Oh, totally, yeah. His delivery is just unique. You know, there have been some amazing promos in the wrestling business throughout its history. Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, Jim Cornette. You can go on and on. You can list them. So many great promos, but so for me, the Rock is at the top of the list, just unbelievable. But I mean, we can't talk promos without mentioning Paul Heyman as well. You know, on and off, he's been a character personality on Raw, commentator as well. Going back to 2001 when ECW closed, and even on occasions prior to 2001, when ECW invaded Raw, I don't know if you remember that. Were occasional appearances by them, and Paul Heyman was part of those as well. But in more recent times, as an advocate for individuals, most notably Brock Lesnar, some of the promos that he's cut were just fantastic, brilliant, some of the best work on the mic that he's ever done. And you know, he's been a great talker throughout his career, going back to his days you know, in WCW and even before that. You know, the delivery again from Heyman is always flawless, always impeccable, and certainly of recent times, the most consistent promo in the company, and always a absorbing watch.
Yeah, just too many to list. It would be difficult to pick them out because he's so consistent. I think to his promos involved in building up the Lesnar versus Samoa Joe match, it was just textbook. That's how you sell a match. Was just tremendous, absolutely tremendous. Another recent one is last year. This was a great Raw moment. I remember we spoke about it at the time, and phenomenal. I loved it. I thought it was beautifully done, brilliantly played out, and that was the Festival of Friendship. Yeah. I just kind of, it still makes me smile, the way it was all done. And you kind of, again, you knew what was coming. You didn't, it was almost classic Attitude Era style in that you had, you pretty much knew what was going to be coming, but you still enjoyed it because it was great fun getting there and it was worth it when you got there. This was just absolutely fantastic stuff from Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Again, Jericho, when it comes to storyline, as good as you'll find, an amazing talent. And obviously, we talked about him in a different way, describing just how good he is last week when it came to his recent appearance for New Japan. And in fact, speaking of Jericho, he will be appearing on the 25th anniversary show next week, which we will talk about later on. But yeah, that whole angle was so clever in terms of how it was put together and assembled, and must have been a really fun thing to put together, and even more fun to deliver. And when it comes to that type of stuff, Jericho and Owen, Kevin Owens rather, are as good as they get in the modern WWE, and their whole delivery was absolutely impeccable and really, really a joy to watch. One of the highlights of Raw in 2017 set up one of the better feuds of that year.
I'm going to throw a couple more at you. What about, do you remember DX invading WCW?
How can I forget? Yep.
I know, obviously, because Triple H is so heavily involved, you know, we do get that one rammed down our throats a bit. But see, I remember that, watching that at the time, you know, and they kept going back and forth to it. I really enjoyed that at the time. I think that incarnation of DX at that time was hot. They were fresh. They were funny. They were on the edge. You know, some of the comedy and the feud that they were having with the Nation of Domination. But that was, you know, I think it was because they actually talked about WCW and people who were at WCW. And it was like, you just didn't really sort of hear that on WWE television at the time.
Well, no, you didn't. I mean, up until not long before that, it was extremely rare for them to even acknowledge the existence of wrestling companies outside of their own promotion. Obviously, you occasionally hear about Smoky Mountain Wrestling or Japan Women, where their talents would make appearances on WWF television, but that was few and far between. For them to acknowledge the competition in WCW, which they first started to do with the Billionaire Ted skits on Raw, I don't know if you remember those, with Macho Man,
the Nacho Man, and the Huckster,
Slim Jims, and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And obviously they took it much, much further with the DX stuff and the invasion of WCW, which I mean, I always profess I was a WCW guy, so I didn't enjoy it as much as those that were more pro WWF. You know, that certainly was very, very instrumental in turning around the Monday Night War in the favor of the WWF, because it was making the WWF come across like the cool, younger, more vibrant, more rebellious product, and WCW like the older, more stuffy, more outdated product. And that worked wonders, because, you know, WCW's ratings started to slightly dip. They were still very strong throughout 98, but the Raw numbers started to pick up and pick up and pick up. And once you came into 99, the Raw numbers ratings-wise were just through the roof, incredibly high. And
never looked back.
It was all off the back of DX and The Rock and Austin.
Yeah. I'm going to throw a couple of debuts at you then. The Radicals, do you remember them debuting that night in, I think it was 2000?
Yes.
Sat
my heart
inside.
Was broken when they...
sorry to rub it in more.
yeah, I mean, they were the great white hopes of WCW in terms of younger talent who were being held down And I felt, look, you know, we've got all these older guys like Roddy Piper and Hogan and all these former WWF main eventers from the 80s. And look, their time's up now. Let's give the younger guys a chance. WCW needs to react to the monster that is the WWF with their Rock and Stone Cold and all these big mega over characters. So let's try and go in a different direction with these fantastic workers. But no, WCW, Eric Bischoff didn't want to do that. And these guys left en masse. And in fact, at that time, I was friends with, I don't know if you remember, a guy called Vampiro. He was a wrestler in the WCW. And his agent was a friend of mine. And he phoned me up about them all leaving en masse. And that they were going to be appearing on Raw. And I thought, oh, for God's sake, really?
We've got some great matches.
That was a killer blow as far as I was concerned. That was the beginning of the end for me. And that was great business for the WWF, though, because they came in and lit up 2000 for the WWF because, you know, especially Benoit, he was the most talented of that crew in terms of in-ring work, followed closely by Eddie Guerrero. And these guys were just having great matches week in, week out with an assortment of talent who were already on the WWF roster, and consistent in terms of the TV show. I would argue that 2000 was the best ever year for the WWF, because it was good from a storyline perspective, but also very, very good from an in-ring perspective because of the influx of these talents and the people that were there looking to step up their game to try and keep up with the likes of your Jericho, with your Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit. And obviously one of their other good friends, Chris Jericho, had only debuted a few months earlier.
That was going to be my other one, the debut. I mean, like I said, I mean, Eddie Guerrero described those four, you know, the Radicals. He described them as the backbone of WCW, you know, before they left. So, and I think there's absolute argument to that. But yeah, the debut of Chris Jericho in 99 was built up for weeks and weeks. And I think it's still one that's celebrated now as arguably the best ever debut, because it was so perfectly done, and a star was born that night. And I get, you know, again, it was the common theme, guys that WCW had overlooked, you know, talent that they'd overlooked, like you said, in favor of guys from the 80s who were all in the mid 40s or older. He was a young guy. He was vibrant. He was fresh. He was talented. He was athletic. He was good in the ring. He could talk. He had charisma. They overlooked him. He came in, bang, phenomenal.
Oh yeah, totally. One of the unforgettable moments in Raw history. And it was so frustrating again for me as a WCW fan, because I was a massive Jericho mark when he was in WCW and even before he arrived in WCW. But certainly during his WCW run, he was probably my favorite talent in the company, in fact, because he was so entertaining as this very quirky character in the cruiserweight division. He actually had what did he call himself? The man of 1,004 holes.
Is it? Yeah, because it was mocking. Was it Dean Malenko? The man of 1,000 right. holes.
And then he had
the list.
Right. So we had a very cold list all the way back in 97 or 80.
Yeah.
You know, and then we had Ralphus, and there was just so much good stuff that he was doing off his own back without any help. And I thought, you know, here's a guy who, with the right kind of push, could really become something in WCW. But again, he was classed as what Hogan termed and coined as a vanilla midget, quite a condescending term, which he was using to describe all these smaller cruiserweight talents that he thought were completely beneath him and didn't belong in the same ring as him. And, you know, he didn't care that they were good at working matches because he felt that that was something that was not important. So they were to be left in mid-card oblivion. Yeah. And Jericho thought, right, I've had enough of this, I'm off. And in one night, he became a bigger star than pretty much anyone in WCW at that point, because WCW was fading fast. And Jericho became this overnight megastar.
Yeah. So there you go.
WWE. So yeah, lesson learned. Yeah.
So there you go, brother. All right. Just to kind of wrap up all of these then. If you had to nail it down to one, what would be your best ever Raw moment then, Mo?
Well, there are so many unforgettable moments, but the one I'm going to go for is the retirement ceremony for Ric Flair. That was in 2008, was it? So it's coming up to 10 years now.
Yeah.
My goodness. I mean, that was a great episode of Raw. It was the night after WrestleMania. And the show was all built around the fact that Ric Flair had been retired the night before in that unforgettable match with Shawn Michaels. And, you know, we saw clips and we saw people paying tribute to him. And then there was the whole ceremony in the ring and with the music, you know, Leave the memories alone, or let the memories remain. Or
oh,
whatever.
Christ, I can't remember. But I remember him bawling his eyes out. But then again,
he bawls his
eyes out at the drop of a hat.
He does, yeah. And he wasn't the only one. I always had it as well.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a WCW mark.
I guess.
WCW.
I'll let you have that one.
Yeah, so, you know, it really meant something to me. And, you know, it was a special night.
Yeah, it was. Now, myself, I have to go for something you mentioned in passing earlier, and that was the whole Tyson Austin segment. For me, that, you know, we all know that wrestling is predetermined. We know it's a show, you know, everything. And you try to suspend disbelief as and where you can. That was one of those very, very rare occasions where you could convince someone it was real. That was a moment that had something about it that really felt real. And I say kudos to Tyson for the way he bought into it all, and the way the whole thing was done. That was 1998. And I believe it was the night after the Royal Rumble in 1998.
It was, yeah.
So we're talking 20 years ago, and you can watch that now, and it still gives you chills. It still has a buzz about it. It still feels incredibly fresh and vibrant and real. And just, I thought, for me, absolutely incredible moment, and also propelled Steve Austin beyond just being a guy or a wrestler at the top of a card at a wrestling promotion into this huge star. And for me, that was the start of Steve Austin going beyond wrestling and being this enormous star that he became in the media, because, you know, WWF become really big news throughout magazines, you know, TV shows, everything. And Steve Austin was, you know, he was everywhere. And that was just something else. It, for me, absolutely something else.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was the angle that turned the fortunes of the WWF around. And without that, who knows if Austin would have become quite as big a star as he ended up becoming in that year and beyond. And it was a massive coup for the WWF to secure Tyson. At that time, he was, I would argue, certainly the most famous and still at that time, the biggest active sports star in the world. You know, you can look at football, American sports with Michael Jordan, for example. But Tyson was still, even though arguably at that time, not quite in his prime, but still a massive, massive personality on a global basis. And after that angle ran, it, as you say, drew massive publicity, coverage from the mainstream press who never covered wrestling, because it was something that was monumental. And no, it drew massive publicity, which then fed into the build-up to WrestleMania. And obviously with Tyson as a referee for that match between Shawn Michaels and Stone Cold, that just worked perfectly. And the interest in that WrestleMania was the biggest that there had been for a WrestleMania in a number of years. You know, that was all thanks to Vince getting in touch with Tyson to work this. And, you know, Tyson obviously grew up as a massive wrestling fan, WWF fan in the 70s.
Yeah, he had a ball doing it all. No two ways about it. He made money, but he had a ball.
He did a great deal.
No.
Yeah, so, but no, that was tremendous, and that drew eyeballs to Raw, and at the same time, WWF was going a very risque direction, and, you know, it just worked perfectly well, the whole thing.
Yeah.
So in certain respects, you can argue that was the most important moment in the history of Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, absolutely. So finally then, what about this 25th anniversary show then, Mo? I mean, you've mentioned there we've heard Chris Jericho's due to be there, Stone Cold Steve Austin. They've mentioned a number of other names in there as well. I mean, what are you expecting from the show?
Pretty much like this pod, a lot of nostalgia. You know,
except stretched over 3.5 hours.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they've got to build up the Rumble as well, which is less than 2 weeks away. But at the same time, because of the amount of old faces that are being lined up for the show, and those, you know, already we've had a lot announced for the show, and I'm sure there'll be two or three surprises thrown in as well. You'd expect, yeah, quite possibly. I mean, if he's there, I think they'll keep it quiet. But I'll be surprised if they haven't got, you know, a couple of surprises, because they like to give us surprises, don't they? Yeah. And, you know, they'll try and mix things up between the younger talent and the older lot. And I would suspect that it'll be the younger lot that are there week in, week out, having to take bumps for the people that are turning up for 1 week. But that's WWE for you. So, yeah, I mean, you'll probably have the Miztourage, you know, all being Stone Cold Stunner or something like that.
I'm happy with that.
Yeah. I mean, as long as it's people that nobody really cares about, that's fine.
Yeah,
you know, if it was... you know, I don't know,
the bar,
Seth Rollins or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then, you know, you can expect a big rant next week. But no, I think they'll book it in a sensible way whereby they let the stars of the past turn up and have their moment without taking the shine off the main players on today's roster. So I think it'll be a really fun show, a good mix of nostalgia along with some decent build up for the Rumble, and I think it'll be very surprising if it isn't a fun show, let's put it that way.
I'm expecting pretty much the same. Obviously lots of names, there's been lots already announced, probably be a few surprises like you say. Lots of nostalgia, couple of, obviously I'd imagine we're quite possibly seeing an intercontinental title switch in there and a few other bits in between, and just overall, like you said, a fun night, And it's to be looked forward to, you know, why the hell not just sit back, relax and enjoy. So just briefly then, one quick final thing before we have to disappear and we get into trouble with gags for the length of this podcast. But four new signings announced by WWE heading straight over to NXT.
Yes, that's right. So we've got more talent coming in from the independent scene. And we've got Jinku Singh, who's somebody who's got a baseball background. I think has impressed the WWE in terms of athleticism. And obviously, as we saw with Jinder Mahal, you know, they're quite keen to build up their fan base and following and monetize the massive Indian market. And unlike Jinder, Jinku is born and bred in India. So I think they're hoping that that can certainly help to make a few more inroads in that market. But more notably from the independent scene, the better half of Johnny Gargano is finally signed to the WWE Performance Center. And that's Candice LeRae. And she's a very talented worker and somebody who I've seen a fair bit of over the last several years, and certainly very, very capable and all-rounded, charismatic as well. Appeared on the Mae Young Classic last year. I think she only worked one, maybe two matches in that tournament. Certainly a fine talent. But the ones that have got everyone very excited are War Machine, who are a tag team that have most recently worked in Ring of Honor in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And
they were at, you know, Wrestle Kingdom, as we spoke of last week as well.
That's right, yeah. They put in their last appearance, or I think penultimate appearance, for New Japan on that show. And you know, it was rumored for months and expected for months that they would be signing for the WWE. And they're like a larger version of the Bludgeon Brothers, but a million times better. they're a really, really good tag team, and you know, you won't fail to be impressed by them. You know, trust me, that they're very, very good as a pairing. And then, last but not least, is Ricochet. Perhaps the top four or five most naturally gifted wrestlers in the entire business in 2018. Has been an incredibly consistent performer over the last 4 or 5 years, wrestled all around the world, extensively here in the UK, all around the US independent scene, worked for a number of years for New Japan Pro Wrestling as well. Just supremely talented. If the WWE allows him to work in the way that he's allowed to work, in the independents, New Japan, fans will be in for a treat, because he's a supreme talent. Trust me, he is so, so good. Incredibly athletic, an amazing high flyer, as graceful through the air as anybody I've ever seen in the wrestling business. And some of his moves are just, you have to see him to believe them. And, you know, if you want to check him out, I'm sure there's plenty of YouTube compilation clips. But he's coming into NXT imminently, and he'll be a massive addition to that roster, because he's quite the talent.
So there you go, guys. Plenty to look forward to. And next week, something to look forward to as well, because as we mentioned, it is, of course, the Rumble coming up. So next week, we will be previewing the Royal Rumble, the entire event, and the NXT TakeOver as well. So don't forget to tune back in next week. But that's it for this nostalgia show. It's been a lot of fun to go back over it. I know it's been a long one. Apologies, gags. But hey, so much to cram in. 25 years is a lot to talk about. So anything that comes out of that 25-year show, I'm sure we'll talk about that next week as well. So my thanks to Mo, as always. Our thanks to all of you for listening and downloading the show. Don't forget you can keep in touch with us on Twitter at PW_index. But until next week, from me, Andy Wills, here at the Pro Wrestling Index, it's bye-bye now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code MOM.